Sure could. We're having record high temperatures in the West. Of course, the tragic wildfire in Arizona taking 19 young lives. Just more and most recent reminders that climate change is real. It's arrived here in the U.S., and we best do something about it. One of the many voices out there saying, you know, what's wrong with this picture is Peter Hart. He works for FAIR. That stands for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Also does a show called Counterspin. And D.R. Tucker was kind enough to send along an article that he wrote, starting with this sentence: it would be nice if newspapers covered policy fights as if reality mattered. That got my attention from the get-go. Thanks for joining us, Peter. Are you with us?
Yes, yes.
Great. I just really want to thank you for your article. It was right on, which is what prompted us to get you on the show. This is part of the problem, isn't it, the way media is covering or not covering, you know, climate change in general and President Obama's speech specifically. You know, some of it is the Republicans who are saying that Obama is declaring a war on coal. It's both the extreme conservative, you know, right-wing Republican element and also the media. So tell us what prompted you to write this piece.
Well, you know, when you talk about climate policy, there are quantity problems with the way the media covered, and then, of course, there are quality problems. The quantity problem was illustrated pretty clearly by Think Progress when they were comparing the number of minutes devoted to Obama's climate speech on the Sunday morning chat shows, which was exactly zero.
That's right.
Compared to coverage on the comedy shows and the fake newscast of The Daily Show, which did 3.5 minutes, I think, on it. So, you know, you have this problem where climate is not even elevated as a particularly important issue, particularly on television. And then you have the problem that I wrote about, which was a New York Times story about how Republicans, primarily Republicans, were reacting to Obama's speech. And the way they were reacting was important only if you think this matters to the next election cycle. And unfortunately, in political journalism, that is one of the priorities. So the New York Times ran a piece, GOP sees opportunity for election gains in Obama's climate change policy, that was based around the idea that the White House has waged this all-out assault on the coal industry, and that the speech represented a further increase in the tone and the tenacity of this war on coal. When a story like that presents this false premise and then arranges all the evidence around that false premise, or most of the evidence, then I think you do a real disservice to people if your purpose is to, as I put it, convey reality. There is no war on coal engineered by the White House. The climate speech disappointed a lot of environmentalists on the issue of coal, and it doesn't appear
that it didn't go far enough, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you have, you can line up from Public Citizen to other climate activist, the Smog Blog, to say, you know, the Obama White House, the reality was that they're continuing to talk about quote-unquote clean coal. There are question marks about coal exports, so, you know, coal that is mined and exported out of the country. Will there be any controls on that? So you don't have a war on coal in the first place, but Republicans and some coal state Democrats feel the need or the pressure to distance themselves from White House policy, and that creates a narrative of reinforcing the idea that the White House is engaging in this war on coal. And, you know, there's the New York Times, and you quote people that talk about how Obama is the most anti-coal president in the history of the country, and now he's doubled down on this policy. You are creating a storyline that is not only false, but, of course, dangerous if you consider the health of the planet at all important.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
Be funny if it wasn't so serious. Are you still with us, DR?
Yes, yes. Peter, what do you make of the argument that you often hear in climate circles and progressive circles that one of the reasons why the mainstream media gives so much short shrift to the issue of climate is that there's not enough presence from the White House about the issue Joe Rome is perhaps the most articulate writer about this, that, you know, that there was a long period of time where there was climate silence in the White House about the issue and a sort of skittishness about it. And if the White House does not use the bully pulpit to emphasize the importance of the issue, the mainstream media will simply ignore it and move on to the other, you know, less intense and less important issues of the day. Is it sort of, in other words, who is ultimately responsible for the lack of media coverage? Is it the media, mainstream media itself, or is it the White House not pressing this as an issue and thus forcing the mainstream media to provide proper attention?
I don't want to cop out and say both, but I think that's the answer. You know, you do have, on the one hand, the White House not presenting this as an important issue. And I still remember very clearly at the close of the 2012 campaign, one of their ads against Romney was to hit Romney from the right on climate policy. They had an old clip of Romney denouncing a new coal plant in Massachusetts, and the Obama ad was to say, you know, this is not your friend on coal. That was shocking, and I think should have made, I think, climate activists sit up straight and take notice of what the White House was willing to say in order to create some advantage in the electoral arena. That said, you know, Obama gave a major speech on climate policy, and you saw that it was hardly covered on the television networks. NBC did an adequate report, but on the other two major networks, it basically didn't exist. It was rip and read. There was a speech today, and we're not even going to show you a clip from it. So there is an example, I think, of the counter argument that he can get out and make a speech about this stuff, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to create a lot of coverage. I think one of the main problems is that political journalism is directed toward seeing the world through the prism of the two parties and of how the parties differ or how the parties clash. And you have a Republican Party that is completely wedded to the idea that Obama is way out there on climate, that he's waging a war on the industry. So that's the rhetoric from one side. And then from the other side, you get, you know, somewhat mixed message. So if you see your job as the kind of referee between those two sides, you're going to give a lot of weight to those anti-climate voices. You're going to give a lot of weight to those pro-industry voices. And it's hard to see what you're going to balance that with. And that's such an important journalistic value, unfortunately, when it's misused, I think, as it is in this story. So you do have a case where, you know, the storyline that the major parties put out there is what really matters. And the Republicans are very clear about where they stand, and the Democrats are somewhat iffy, or they tend to not prioritize it, as you say. And that creates a dynamic where I think, you know, climate justice fails on both counts. You're not getting the attention, and when you do get the coverage, it's not what you'd like, or it's not what it should be.
And you made a point in your article of mentioning the irony that it's not the White House, it's actually the, you know, free market forces that have led to cheaper natural gas and an abundance of that supply. That's what's really been, you know, making the coal-fired power plants go out of business.
Yeah, and that's the most frustrating thing about this story, that the story is all built around what Republicans are saying about the war on coal. And then if you read three-quarters of the way, and actually there isn't a war on coal so much, because what it is an overabundance of natural gas in the energy supply, and that makes coal less viable in comparison to natural gas. So that explains what's going on. And you think, well, if you know that, and if you establish that that's a fact, then all of this Republican rhetoric that you're covering as important is nonsense. So wouldn't an adequate story point that out and not just carry water for it? I mean, when I was doing this piece, I was realizing that there's a Republican press release that was put out right after the speech that is almost identical to this New York Times story, that it lines up all of the politicians saying the war on coal continues. It cites this study that says 37,000 jobs at coal-fired power plants are being threatened. The New York Times doesn't even identify that this is a Republican think tank that generated this quote-unquote study. You know, if you're just going to play along with what the parties are putting out there, and you're not going to challenge it, or you're not going to challenge it hard enough, then you might as well just run the press releases.
Peter, we talk often on this show about how the mainstream press does not link extreme weather events to climate change, and we were struck by the fact that a couple of nights ago, CBS Evening News actually did make that connection, but still, it's noteworthy because it's so rare. Do you think it's time for climate activists to start, shall we say, leaning forward on the mainstream media to start stepping up its coverage of climate change? Well, I often think about the comparison Bill McKibben always makes to the civil rights movement of the 1960s. And if you read back, one of the things that made the civil rights movement so important was the amount of media coverage it received. So is it something where climate activists, as they push back on Keystone, as they push back on, you know, fracking and what have you, do they have to start leaning in on the press in the United States to start to say, hey, we need you and we are demanding that you expand the focus of your coverage of this issue?
I think so, and I think people do that, and I think they'll continue to do it even more. You're right that, you know, when you watch this stuff, it's rare. You know, USA Today has been running some pieces. They kind of have a series going about how climate change is impacting the weather that we're experiencing. And it's a fairly regular series, tends to go on the front page, and that's very good. The TV coverage of every extreme weather event doesn't make this connection. The Keystone coverage, what little there is, often misses the climate justice angle of this story, which I think is the most important part of the Keystone story. I can't imagine writing about or doing a broadcast piece about Keystone and not talking about climate, but that seems to be the way that the press is able to operate. You know, CBS, their extreme weather correspondent, there's a guy, David Bernard, who they bring on to explain hurricanes and tornadoes and that kind of thing. He is a climate change denier, at least the self that appears on Twitter that gets into debates about this with people. So, you know, you have to understand that the person that a network calls on for its national newscast to explain climate and extreme weather doesn't believe that climate change is responsible or even a major factor in this. So that's the kind of thing that I think people need to push back on as well, to say, who are the experts, who are the voices that you're bringing on? And where is the climate angle in all of these stories? We don't live in another climate that can be evaluated outside the impacts of climate change. I think it's always an important point for people to make. We are living with the results of catastrophic climate change right now. So it's not open for debate about whether it's impacting our climate. Of course it is. The question for journalists is, how do you make those connections and how do you evaluate that evidence and how do you make it a part of all of these stories? How do you report on droughts and wildfire and pretend that the climate doesn't exist? It's remarkable, and I think it's a great challenge for activists. We've seen a lot of movement on this. We've seen a lot of energy being put into Keystone, and you realize that Keystone is a story that is covered because of the activism. You know, without that activism, Keystone doesn't exist as a story, as a national story. So it's a lesson for people to understand that you can push these stories into the mainstream media. It's difficult, and you don't have the resources of the natural gas lobby and the oil lobby. But by persistent activism, you can create stories where I think journalists would normally not see them.
And just to underscore that, Media Matters is out with a survey today showing less than 10%, you know, of the mainstream media, I think it was broadcast and print outlets, TV and print, you know, made the connection between the wildfires burning and climate change. And so they're doing better than they did a year ago, but still, you know, abysmally low percentage. And that is, of course, that continues to be part of the problem. CNN has been doing wall-to-wall coverage, you know, of the George Zimmerman trial. We know more about, you know, the cause of his nosebleed than we do about, you know, the melting Arctic and, you know, the short shrift that the networks gave Obama's speech. You know, it was a voiceover on, I think, one of the networks I was watching. Shame.
Yeah, and, you know, the only reason they're going to, or the only way that they will feel shame is if people call them out on it, because without that, you know, it's business as usual. So, you know, the research is important, you know, to understand and to document how little coverage this is getting. And, you know, we've been doing this probably for the last 10 years, but to continue at it and to create a movement that demands more of a voice in climate discussions in the media, I think, is an important thing. You know, we're going to get to a point where the politics are going to matter less and the partisanship is going to matter less, I hope, and we'll start to talk about reality a lot more.
Do you think there's still enough awareness in on public television and public radio about the influence of certain, shall we say, contributors to a skewed coverage of the climate change issue? I know FAIR has written about you know, some of the things that go on in public television and public radio, and how you have this sort of false balance and false equivalency, and then you hear this sort of voiceover saying that, you know, this program, such and such program, has been brought to you in part by, you know, insert oil company X or insert national gas you know, advocacy group Y. Does the average viewer of public television or the average listener to public radio realize how much of the programming they hear is influenced by these sort of outside forces, these sort of partisan traditional energy forces?
You know, I think my sense of it is that the radio audience is much more attuned to this, the NPR in particular. And over the last several years, I think they've got an enormous amount of critical response because people can't help but notice that the America's Natural Gas Alliance is bringing you Morning Edition or All Things Considered on your local station. I've heard stories about local NPR affiliates that will do public events on fracking, and they'll be co-sponsored by, you know, a major oil company or a major gas company. And the connection, I think, is troubling to people, and they want to ask questions about it. NPR's response, of course, is always that, you know, that funding does not impact what we do. And I think that that's a rather hollow reply. The gas companies and the oil companies would not line up to sponsor their stuff if they thought the coverage was particularly critical of their industry. And you can think of the sponsorship as kind of an insurance policy almost to keep the coverage the way that it is and to make sure that it doesn't change all that much. So I think people are raising those questions, and you know, over the last couple of years with the ombud at NPR, they've gotten somewhere, because we can't accept the idea that our quote unquote public media should be underwritten by oil companies, should be underwritten by energy giants. That's completely unacceptable. And it's unacceptable to accept their excuse that this is just the way things are, it's just money and no strings are attached. That's not the way that public media should function, and I think people are right to be suspicious about this, particularly when they feel like the coverage doesn't represent a critical enough distance from the interests of these energy giants.
Well, I guess that says something about independent media. We've been talking about climate change for 10 years on my shows. That's the good news, is no one's paying me to do it, so I can say whatever I believe to be the facts, and D.R. Tucker helps me do that. I want to thank you so much, Peter Hart, for your contribution with this great article.
My pleasure.
Peter Hart with FAIR and Counterspin. We're going to go